Jessica, good morning.
Good morning.
So to start off with, keeping it simple, what exactly are superfoods?
Okay, well, superfoods tend to be represented as being very nutritious, so that draws upon our understandings of food and health through nutritional science, but they're also associated with tradition and authenticity. So they're often coming from places that we see as exotic or having a long culture and history of producing these foods. But the term itself doesn't have any legal or regulatory meaning. It's largely used by marketing and media. But I have found that it does have a lot of meaning in some people's lives. People are looking for, a way of being healthy, and superfoods kind of functions as a way to think about what is healthy food.
So what are the kinds of foods that fall under this category, and what are some of the supposed benefits?
Well, there's all kinds of foods that have been labeled superfoods. Some of the more common ones you might have heard about are quinoa, chia seed, kale, the acai berry from Brazil. There's all kinds of benefits that are claimed for these foods, and most of them are very nutritious. Some of them will have, high vitamin C, high protein. Some of them also have, folkloric associations of traditionally being used in a certain way. So, for example, maca from the Peruvian Andes has a history of being used in association with fertility, enhancing fertility. And there have been some scientific studies that back that up. But whether or not these are actually as healthy as they're being made out to be, or whether they're so healthy that we need to include them in addition to a regular diet, the jury's still out on that.
So what kind of consequences are producers facing with the rise of superfoods?
Well, I think it's complicated. I mean, on the one hand, a lot of times these foods are produced, not always, but quite often they're produced in developing countries by people who were fairly marginalized, and this does give them an opportunity to have a culturally appropriate source of livelihood. On the other hand, that livelihood tends to be very unevenly distributed. Quite often it's more the processors, the marketers, the retailers who are making more of the money rather than the farmers, which of course is always the story with primary producers worldwide, as well as, there's all kinds of consequences in regards to when we suddenly have a high demand for something that's coming from a particular environmental landscape. It is going to have an impact on the environment as we produce more and more of this product, as well as, it can have impacts on sort of distribution of wealth and gender equality.
So I've been told by some of my producers about a term, nutritional primitivism, I believe that's how
you
say it. I've been told
right.
It started, I believe, Dr. Christine Knight was the one mm-hmm. that originally came up with this. Would you be able to tell us a bit more about what that actually means?
Sure. Well, my colleague Christine at the University of Edinburgh, originally from Adelaide, she worked on nutritional primitivism in relation to low carbohydrate diets and things like paleo and superfoods are really similar. They're tapping into this idea that people really knew what to eat in the past, and we should really be eating in the simpler way that our ancestors ate. And there tends to be this conflation of the past and our ancient primitive ancestors with contemporary indigenous people that we see living kind of simpler lifestyles. And of course, that really simplifies the complex relationships that these people have with the global economy, with their own food security. So to kind of look at people growing, acai in the Amazon or something like that as living in this kind of pre-capitalist utopia really does them a disservice, and also I think doesn't acknowledge a lot of the contemporary issues that they face being part of the global food production economy. Nutritional primitivism, it's nostalgic. It's people, feeling like we're not happy with the way that our food system is working at the moment, and we kind of are trying to look to the past to say, oh, it was so much better then, which of course, isn't necessarily true. There's always been diseases of malnutrition, unequal distribution of food resources. So while we can look to the past for some inspiration, we also have to really deal with the present reality we live in and think about how we can really solve our problems of global food insecurity.
seems to be an attitude that covers a few different areas, not necessarily just food either.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, you know, I think it's pretty easy to kind of look to the past and say, well, you know, things were so much better, and now we have all this complicated technology, and it's become too complicated. And, you know, I mean, I can understand that appeal, but at the same time, I don't know if it does any service in really trying to actually solve the problems we're dealing with today.
So to just wrap things up, I guess, we'll ask you in your own opinion, I guess, do you think superfoods, are they just good marketing, or do you think they actually do hold some benefits that people should be looking into?
Well, for everything we know in terms of nutritional science and also the tradition behind these foods, I think they are healthy foods. They are nutritious foods, but whether or not it's worth it to go out and spend a lot of money as well as to ship these products all around the world, I mean, that's something I think everyone really needs to think about for themselves and look into the way these products are produced. You know, look into where your food is coming from and what some of the consequences might be, and really start to think about what kind of food system that we want to participate in. And I think that goes beyond the individual shopping as well. I think, you know, need to start to be active political citizens as well, and kind of demand the change that we want to see.
Well, Jessica, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.